Thank you, Sue, and welcome to the Court of Appeals for June 16. Before we begin, I'll ask the marshal to introduce the panel.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Sleater, Judge Werke, Judge Bond, the Honorable Randall J. Sleater presiding.
And this matter that we had was rescheduled from, I believe, April 24. It's file A24-1744. John Frederick Haugen is the petitioner appellant versus the Commissioner of Public Safety as respondent. As a reminder, counsel, you'll each have 15 minutes initially. Are you both able to see the clock somewhere on your screen?
Yes, Your
Great.
Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Excellent. Thank you. And we are proceeding on the Zoom platform as well as live streaming and recording these proceedings. No other recording is allowed, absent pre-approval, which we've not sought or received in this case. So we do ask counsel, when you begin your comments, you do identify yourself by name and whom you represent. The audio recording is typically available on the court's website within 24 hours. And so with those preliminary comments, counsel for appellant, you may identify yourself and begin.
May it please the court, my name is Steve Meshbesher. I represent John Haugen. Tommy Feistinger is just graduated law school. He is a paralegal working in my law firm. He is not a licensed attorney, but he's also present sitting across from me. The appeal is not that complicated. The first issue that I raised was the stop of his boat on Lake Minnetonka in Hennepin County was unlawful. He had his docking lights and navigational lights on his boat at the same time. The deputy who testified at the hearing claimed these lights obscured the red and green navigational lights. But the body camera footage, which has been introduced and viewed by us, shows that that's not true.
Mr. Meshbesher, didn't the district court credit that testimony of the officer? And isn't that a factual finding that this court has to defer to?
It does, unless the deferral is unreasonable and does not, it flies in the face of the facts. The fact that it was a body cam, if it was just his testimony, I would have to agree with the court, but it's his body camera was on. And so we have a visual observation and his testimony that contradict each other. That's not what I see when I watch his body camera. That's what I heard him say.
Well, I mean, maybe that's a good basis for this court to conclude we need to defer to the district court. I mean, I watched the body cam or the footage, and it doesn't appear to me that when the officer's boat is at that quarter mile distance from your client's boat, it doesn't appear to me that those navigation lights are visible at that initial point, although they become visible once the officer's boat is closer to your client's boat. So I'm not sure that the officer's testimony was actually inconsistent with the footage, which still leads me to believe that there isn't enough for this court to find that the officer's testimony, as found by the district court, was clearly erroneous.
I appreciate the court having prepared for today and your observation of what you thought the body cam showed, but I believe the body cam footage shows it is visible, and that the court at the district level was erroneous. There was no other traffic violations. There was no erratic boating. There was no speed issues. There was no complaints by other boats. And I believe the error by the district court is they had a mistaken belief that the legality of docking lights cannot justify a stop all by itself if it's just in black and white. The docking lights were used briefly. We don't dispute that, but they were reasonably to navigate the buoys near the dock. That's not our position, is that's not illegal. It's actually safe boating practice. The stop.
Isn't the specific question whether the use of the docking lights obscured the visibility of the navigation lights? And if it did, isn't that a violation of the law that justifies the stop?
If that is true, if that's what you see, then that is correct. I can't dispute that, but I don't believe it does. I think the district court was clearly erroneous in there what they saw. The docking lights and navigation lights were both on. You can see both lights. And the docking lights were on strictly. The navigation lights are required, and they were on. He was following the law as it's statutorily or by ordinance required. The docking lights were also on because he testified, and there's no dispute as to his testimony that there was buoys in the area. There was no other lighting. There was no other boats. And he wanted to make sure he did not violate hitting the buoys or anything like that. And I cite, quote, "There must be objective facts su suggesting a violation, not speculation or confusion over the rules." And if the court wants to take it literally and in a narrow vision, then I guess he would have the right to stop it. But in the totality of the circumstances, if you look at that video, he had both lights on. He had the navigational, which is required, but he also had the other lights on for safety purposes. And it did not obstruct navigational, as far as I can tell. And I have perfect vision, but I'm not going to argue that any further, and I'm prepared to go further into the argument if I may. Then I would say that there's no probable cause to arrest him.
Well, let me interrupt you there before we get into the probable cause. And this is my concern. I'm not sure if you preserved those challenges for us on appellate review. My review of the record indicates that you didn't challenge the situation under which the field sobriety tests were conducted, and you didn't challenge the PBT. Can you tell me how these issues have been preserved for appellate appeal?
I thought we had made a record with the transcript appealing the entire record and the totality of it, and that the arrest was predicated on evidence that was not clear. In the PBT, that is in that's it's not evidence that can be used in court because of its unreliability. The field sobriety tests, where I cross-examined the officer about his reciting the alphabet and counting backwards, that he did correctly, goes to the probable cause. The officer admitted that the petitioner appellant was able to recite the alphabet and count backwards correctly. And I thought, by virtue of my examination of the officer, that is preserved for purposes of this appeal. If I didn't do it on a technical level, I apologize to this court. I thought I did. But the information on probable cause still has to be trustworthy.
On the probable cause issue, you know, you talked about reciting the alphabet and his ability to do that, but what do we do about the officer testifying as to bloodshot eyes, the odor of alcohol? Your client admitted he had been drinking. I mean, that's the totality of the circumstances. So how do we set that aside and concentrate only on the alphabet being recited correctly?
You don't. That's a good question. You look at the totality of the circumstances. You also look at that he was calm, cooperative. He showed no signs of impairment. When they asked him a question, he answered it truthfully. He did admit to having a drink and a glass of wine. He did not slur his speech. He did not stumble. He had no trouble with his coordination. And the PBT, the horizontal gaze nystagmus test was partially done in his boat, and then he climbed over into the officer's boat with no assistance and no observable signs of intoxication and completed it in his boat. You look at the totality of all the tests, not just one. I think your question is good, but you look at it, the whole picture, not just part of it. I'm not trying to isolate it. So you look at just one part. I'm asking the court to look at the totality of the whole picture. And the horizontal gaze nystagmus, in my examination of the officer, was admittedly in his testimony conducted improperly because it was on a rocking boat. And the distance started in my client's boat. He had to step over into the officer's boat on the water as they're both rocking. And the deputy admitted to these flaws. What he should have done is, if he wants to take it further, to get a horizontal gaze nystagmus test with accuracy, is bring them to a piece of land where it's solid and it's not rocking, and have them do it so he can stand on a solid piece of land and then do it. But you don't do it on a rocking boat and then partially do it on one boat and then partially do it on another boat. The officer admitted that was a flaw, and the PBT has a margin of error that could make it below 0.08. And I would suggest to this court that the smell of alcohol, admitting that he had a drink, his eyes being red, are not enough under the totality of the circumstances. It's not just one factor interpreted in isolation. Here, the objective facts show sobriety, and the probable cause simply wasn't met. The final issue is the data master. The petitioner, appellant, hired a expert who used to work at the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. We did it based upon his experience as an expert in the data master and toxilizer and the breathalyzer. He had been experienced in all three machines. We acknowledge that if the state meets its prima facie burden, the burden then shifts to us to produce affirmative evidence of unreliability. And we thought by hiring this gentleman, we did that. He tested exactly to 0.08, which is the statutory minimum. But the data master, per the testimony of the expert, has a known margin of error of 0.0098. And this was right at the time of the COVID-19 fiasco.
Mr. Meshbesher, I just, in the interest of time, the district court heard the testimony from both the expert witnesses and made pretty specific factual findings, crediting the expert testimony of the commissioner and rejecting the testimony of your expert witness. Doesn't that resolve the issue as to whether this court can refer or rely on the defense or the petitioner's expert testimony on this issue?
And counsel, feel free to answer, though your time has expired, but you may answer the judge's question.
Thank you, Your Honor. No, I think if the district court was clearly erroneous under well-settled Fourth Amendment and implied consent law, you can reverse it under that standard. And I believe the standard's been met. Thank you.
Very well, thank you. And counsel for respondent, you will now have 15 minutes. And when you are ready, you may identify yourself and begin.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, counsel. May it please the court. My name is Ava Kendrick, and I represent the respondent, Commissioner of Public Safety, in this matter. The commissioner asks that this court affirm the district court order sustaining Mr. Haugen's implied consent license revocation. The district court's conclusions that the stop was supported by reasonable, articulable suspicion, that the arrest was supported by probable cause, and that the DMT data master breath test was accurate and reliable were all correct and well supported by the record in this case. In challenging the district court order, appellant is asking this court to reconsider, reject the district court's express credibility determinations, and reweigh the available evidence. The district court did not err in any of its conclusions as to any of these three challenges that were raised at the district court. With respect to the stop, the district court clearly found there was a violation of rule requiring that appellant's boat red and green navigational lights be visible at a distance of up to 1 mile, not that they simply be turned on, but that they are visible for a distance of up to 1 mile.
Ms. Kendrick, it does strike me when you watch the video that those red and green lights became visible pretty quickly after that initial, I think, time during when the officer was observing Mr. Haugen's boat. So is that really enough for a stop since those lights became visible pretty quickly?
Your Honor, it is enough for a stop because the rule requires that they be visible at a distance of 1 mile. And the public safety reasoning behind that rule is important in that the red and green navigational lights allow boats to tell which direction of travel and allow boats to navigate around one another at greater distances. If they only become visible in closer proximity, there could be hazards involved with that, possible collisions. So the fact that they were not visible at a greater distance does pose a safety concern, and it does give a valid basis for the stop in this instance. The district court did specifically credit the officer's testimony. She found that the officer to be credible, that his testimony was consistent and largely corroborated by the body-worn camera and the other exhibits. Specifically, the officer did testify that he could see the red and green navigational lights as he drew closer, but as I've mentioned, they were not visible at a greater distance. So under George and under the rule, the stop is valid in this instance.
Counsel, what do we make of the fact that the district court didn't say anything, at least that I recall, either in the findings or conclusions about the body cam video? The reason I'm asking is it would have been beneficial at least to have some finding of the court, either that it read it differently, or the point you're making that perhaps it was quickly visible but was not at the time the officer first observed. Something to explain perhaps that purported distinction between the officer's testimony and the video.
The district court, while it didn't necessarily write out all of their observations that they considered while watching the video, did consider the body-worn camera, and the district court did make a finding that the officer's testimony was largely corroborated by the three exhibits, including the body-worn camera. So that finding that the officer's testimony was corroborated by the video tells this court that they considered the video in making those determinations. With respect to probable cause for arrest, the district court's conclusions were correct and, again, well supported by the record. The district court, again, credited the officer's testimony and that there were several different indicia of impairment, including bloodshot and watery eyes, an odor of alcohol, and admission to drinking, clues observable on the horizontal gaze nystagmus test, and a preliminary breath test result over the legal limit. As Judge Werke pointed out, we are looking at the totality of the circumstances here, and the totality of the circumstances do clearly support probable cause under numerous case law, including Holtz versus Commissioner of Public Safety, which says even one indicia of impairment may support probable cause for arrest. I'd also specifically note LaDuser, which held that a admission to drinking coupled with one other indicia of impairment supports probable cause for arrest. So even if this court weren't considering the horizontal gaze nystagmus test and the preliminary breath test, probable cause for arrest would exist here. However, the horizontal gaze nystagmus test is properly considered as a factor supporting probable cause for driving while impaired or boating while impaired. The deputy was a deputy working on the water patrol. He had conducted horizontal gaze nystagmus test before. The deputy clearly pointed out that on the test, he's looking for involuntary jerking of the eye. And he was able to distinguish between swaying and rocking and the involuntary jerking of the eye. So the fact that the boats were rocking did not skew his observations on this test, because he was able to distinguish between, rocking up and down and that involuntary jerking that he saw during the test. So the horizontal gaze nystagmus test too supports probable cause. And the preliminary breath test, as this court is well aware, is a tool that can be used in making an arrest decision, although it doesn't have all of the safeguards as the DMT test, for example. The officer and the district court properly relied on it in supporting the probable cause for arrest in this instance. With respect to the accuracy and reliability of the DMT breath test, the district court again made express credibility determinations and credited the testimony of respondent's expert over the testimony of appellant's expert. As counsel correctly pointed out, the commissioner must meet their prima facie case for admissibility and reliability of the breath test. The burden then shifts to the driver to show that something actually happened in their test that causes the result to be unreliable. That is a standard that's been reflected in many of this court's opinions, including most recently in Knapp versus Commissioner of Public Safety. That case is not yet reported in the Northwest Reporter, but the internal citation is A241440. In this case, the appellant has not met their burden to rebut the prima facie case. Their arguments that they raised were expressly rejected by the district court. First, with respect to the body temperature, the district court found that appellant had not actually established the fact that he had an elevated body temperature at the time. He had not testified to the temperature of the day, simply stated it was a hot July night. The district court found that appellant's wife had offered him a jacket. And so the external weather temperature was not established to be unusually high. and appellant hadn't established that he had an internal body temperature that was elevated. He simply stated that the day after his arrest, he tested positive for COVID, but he had not testified that he had a fever on the day of his arrest. So appellant first hasn't established facts that affect his breath test. And even if he had established an elevated body temperature, the district court credited respondent's expert testimony that no reliable studies established that an elevated body temperature artificially elevated a test result. And similarly, the district court credited the respondent's expert testimony with regard to the accuracy of the breath sample itself, the way it was provided. Those findings of fact and conclusions were not clearly erroneous, and this court should affirm the license revocation on the basis of the stop, the arrest, and the accuracy and reliability of the test. I'm happy to address any additional questions. If there are none, I'll yield my time.
I see no other questions. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
And that means we'll turn it back over to counsel for appellant. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Can the court hear me okay?
Yes, and if you want to just wait a moment, we'll wait till the marshal. There we are. We have the five. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you. We don't dispute the law. We know that navigational lights are required, and they were working and on. The docking lights were also on, not because of other boats, not for safety reasons of other people on the lake at that particular time, but he testified as to the buoys, and he was trying to be overly cautious and safe not to hit a buoy or get into areas where the water was shallow. And the state makes this statements that it's largely corroborated by the body cam. What I did is I looked at the body cam and read the transcript, and it has to corroborate exactly, not largely. The having both the docking lights and the navigation lights does not support a stop when there are no other boats. He's doing for safety reasons of a buoy, not another boat. He had the navigation lights, which was required, but he also, to be better safe than sorry, had the other lights on so he could make sure he sees the buoys. And that initial stop under those circumstances is based on speculation, not on articulable basis of fact. I know that's a low standard. I know what the court has to do for interpretation of the law. I go back to law school when I first read Terry versus Ohio. I'm not going to dispute that and what it says and who wrote it, but it still has to have some articulation that's reasonable, not substantially one corroborates the other. You can't do that. The probable cause, I'd just be repeating myself. I won't go into that, but the testimony, I think, was very, when his wife testified as to his, they let her drive the boat away and he went with the officer. And the next morning he tested positive for COVID-19. And the fact that COVID-19 was new virus to the world, not just to people on Lake Minnetonka, to everybody, including the court system, should have been taught to the officer to be a little more careful because of the COVID-19. It literally shut down the court system. It shut down our society. And the elevated temperature of his body should have been tested for purposes to see whether or not that could affect the data master, which our expert says it could and would. Having said that, I believe everything has been addressed, and I want to thank the court for its time.
Very well. Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions today and your briefing. We will now take the matter under advisement. We'll issue an opinion within 90 days. We will be now adjourned, and you have a good day.
Thank you,
Jeff.
Thank you.